A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, three tremendous nerds, strong in the geek side of the Force, came together to face their greatest challenge yet, the behemoth known as the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
Now witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational battle station.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets illusions of grandeur.
Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
Sir, it's quite possible this asteroid is not entirely stable.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
I have a bad feeling about this.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Welcome to the Thrawn and On podcast, a subcast of the Skiffy and Fanti show. I'm Sean.
I'm Kate.
I'm Alex.
And we're obviously here to talk about more Star Wars, if that wasn't obvious, because that's what we do. So who wants to tell them what we're going to be talking about this particular episode?
We are reading Cross Current by
Paul S. Kemp, correct? So Kate wanted to add a new thing where we do basically a Star Wars Fandro, where we talk about a thing that we all really, really love and is making us happy inside. And so we all basically agreed that we would do this. And so now here we go. So I'm going to jump to Alex first because Alex has this huge news that they want to talk about. So what is your Star Wars Fanjoy?
Okay, so my Star Wars Fanjoy is, since it was May the 4th, Lucasfilm did like a massive dump of, we're going to publish a million.
Sorry.
And my co-hosts are approximately like 5 years old.
Star Wars massive dump.
It was a space dump, okay?
I'm just imagining Star Wars just like, the internet is its toilet. And so they just shut up.
I mean, Sean, have you seen Twitter? It's Twitter. That's the Star Wars dump. Anyway, so they did like a massive news dump of, we're going to publish like a bajillion comic books and novels and adult novels and middle grade novels and kids comics. And like, there's a lot of really cool stuff on it. And the two that I want to like geek about the most are Rebecca Roanhorse is going to write Journey to Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, Resistance Reborn, which is, I think, basically the novel that will bridge between The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. But when they put out the title, it has two colons in it, which I feel is excessive. But anyway, I'm excited about that, and it's coming out the day before my birthday this year. And then the other thing that is super cool is Justina Ireland is going to be writing a middle grade novel called Spark of the Resistance. That's going to come out in October, and it's about Ray, Poe, and Rose.
I was just going to ask, aren't both of these people basically what you could call friends of the pod?
I would imagine so.
Yeah, I think we've had interviews.
Like, I don't want to be that guy just being like, oh yeah, I'm friends with everyone who's famous and cool and writing for Star Wars.
But... no, but we've interviewed both of them in the last year or so on Skiffy and Fanti.
That is true, but now they are more famous than our show. So
that's true.
And as has been pointed out on the internet by Jen, who is, I think, occasionally the person who sucks the hope out of the world by bringing brutal realism, is that Star Wars and all of its properties are like notoriously, they just don't let anybody mess with it. So we're not going to get advanced review copies. We're not going to get like we probably can't even interview people until probably like 79 days after Rise of Skywalker comes out, and only probably under armed guards from space.
I mean, they've got the Disney snipers. I just, so I, hopefully, I think we should link it in the show notes where the, from StarWars.com that has the list and it's got a bunch of the covers. I just saw like one of them is called The Galaxy Needs You and it's a picture book.
Yep.
And it has Rey on the cover and the description. Have you ever stopped to think about how there is nobody else in the galaxy who is exactly like you? Oh my heart!
Don't worry, Alex. This will be linked in the show notes.
And also, isn't there going to be like a pop-up book, which...
yep.
Like, I feel like they're really getting out of control here.
Oh, they have learned of the power of merchandise. It is more powerful than the dark side of the Force.
Merchandising, where the real money of the film is made. Yes, there it is. Journey to Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, Star Wars, The Ultimate Pop-Up Galaxy. It has author and pop-up engineer, which I want to be a pop-up engineer when I grow up.
That sounds like a great job.
Matthews is the king of paper engineering. Like, how do you get a title like this?
It's a title that they gave to themselves.
I was going to say, that sounds like a self-bestowed title.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not bestowed by anybody except themselves.
Well, I would expect your pop-up books to be highly geophysically accurate.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll go, because mine is adorable, and then it'll lead right into Kate's, which is, I found out today, thanks to my lovely co-host, that the California legislature voted officially to designate May 4th, the day before we are recording this podcast, as Star Wars Day. So in California, officially, Star Wars Day is May 4th. It's not just a Twitter hashtag. It's not just like a fun internet thing like, May the 4th be with you. No. It is now official. Thanks to Tom Daley. You are an amazing person. Cal State Assembly, you all are awesome. I assume this was unanimously decided because anybody who would say no to this, who is in Congress or the State Assembly or whatever body, should immediately be recalled from office and replaced with a penguin. So.
You're not wrong.
It's just so silly, and I just love it that we're just at this point that Star Wars is so big here that we have, like, a day in a state. A state has elected a whole day. It's just a Star Wars day. That's just amazing. There's no Marvel Day, right? There's no, like, Superman Day. Anyway, Kate, what about yours?
Okay, I'm going to cheat and combine two, because my Star Wars fanjoy concerns both a film nerd who has never seen Star Wars, and he's possibly one of the ultimate film nerds of our day, and a jock who grew up loving Star Wars so much that he's still showing his love this very weekend. So probably, if you've been paying attention to Twitter, you've probably seen that little video snippet with Werner Herzog geeking out on Mandalorians, loving it to death. And then the other bit, Yankees pitcher, and I'm going to possibly pronounce his last name wrong because I'm not a Yankees fan. I'm a Rockies fan. Hello. But occasionally, and I'm mad at the Yankees for stealing Adam Ottavino from us, even though he was perfectly free to go and that's his hometown. Anyway, CC Sabathia is a lifelong Star Wars fan, even though in high school he played basketball and football and baseball at incredibly high levels and has had an amazing Major League Baseball pitching career. Yesterday, on Star Wars Day, he dressed himself up as Yoda, with complete makeup and everything, drove to Yankee Stadium, and stood there handing out, it was CC Sabathia bobblehead day. So the first however many thousands of fans that showed up to the stadiums were getting a bobblehead commemorating him, and he was handing them out dressed as Yoda. Furthermore, he has said that once he retires, and there's rumors that this might be the last year, he's going to start going to Star Wars conventions. So Star Wars, see, really is for everybody. Even the jocks that used to beat us up on the playground for playing Star Wars on the monkey bars.
You had some experience. Jeez. Like, I was very specific.
Yes, well.
Well, it is adorable. So thank you.
Isn't it cute?
All right. So this leads us to talking about Cross Current.
Cross Current.
Cross Current.
Cross Current.
Indeed.
Don't cross the streams, Alex.
All right.
So this is your time. Tell us what this book is about so that we can dive into it.
I mean, I can tell you what this book isn't about. Any women.
Right?
So, written in those heady days of 2010, long before women were invented, Paul S. Kemp brings us a time travel tale, which is kind of cool. It starts out 5,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, if I'm remembering correctly. And there's, like, a Sith douchebag who fries an entire moon because he wants, like, the special Sith mineral out of it. And he thinks it's cool to murder everything on the moon to get Sith mineral. And they mine it up. And then there's, like, a Jedi named Relan and his Padawan, also a dude, who are going to try to stop the Sith, who also used to be Relan's Padawan, so as you can imagine, he has some feelings about this. Very manly feelings. Relan gets in there, and he fucks with the hyperdrive, and then he tries to escape, and his Padawan, like, crashes the fighter into the ship to keep them from leaving, and there's, like, hyperdrive shenanigans, and for reasons of hyperdrive shenanigans, Relan and the Sith dreadnought full of Sith mineral get transported 5,000 years into the future. That's one plot thread. The other one, his name is Jaden, and he's very sad for reasons and full of doubts and has manly feelings and has a vision from the Force that are like, hey, you need to go to this place called the Black Hole, which is actually a bar where smugglers hang out, spoilers. And then it'll take you to this other place where you'll have the answers you seek. So Jaden goes and, you know, meets many men along the way and then hooks up with a couple other men and they go to the place, which is a moon, and they discover a hidden secret Imperial facility there that is blaring out a warning that's like, oh my god, everything in here is dead. Please do not come down to this planet. So of course Jaden and his buddy go down to the planet. That moon is also where the Sith and Relan, who is now missing an arm, by the way, because that happened while he was trying to destroy the hyperdrive, they pop in right there too. So things kind of come together and truths are found out. And then there's also a brain-eating alien that just kind of is following Jaden around like the world's creepiest creeperton. And all he desperately wants to do is get Jaden's autograph. I mean, stick his feeders up Jaden's nose and eat his brain. Of my experience in Star Wars novels, this is the one that involved things going up people's noses the most. It also involved the most vomit out of any Star Wars novel I've read, which was shocking, and the fewest women.
Yeah, and it should be noted that the character you're talking about is Kel Doro, or Dowro. I'm not sure how you say his last name, because there wasn't an audiobook version of this one, which sucks. He is part of a group in the Legends universe known as Anzadi, who are sort of mysterious and kind of close off from the world, but almost universally their appearance in the Star Wars universe is of them eating other people's brains. Pretty much that's all they do.
I mean, I get the impression that that's their like biological drive, so I can't even be mad because he was basically like born to eat people's brains.
Well, there is a difference in that Kel is kind of a radical for the Anzadi people because he believes, like, he talks all the way through the book, this idea of, like, the Deinosi, which is this, like, the fate lines, which is, like, this other version of, I guess, the Force or something, whatever, where he thinks that he can see things. Basically, no other Anzadi believes, like, they all basically kind of think he's insane. And it may, in fact, be that he's insane, except that we're in his head, so from his perspective, it seems totally rational that he is sucking people's brains out in order to get a deeper connection to all of this. I don't know what that deeper connection is, because as far as I'm aware, while Anzadi do appear in other stories, they typically are not as centralized in the stories, and none of them really are like Kel, who believes in this, like, fates and all of that stuff. But he's interesting as a character in the sense that he is scary as hell, because he doesn't seem to care about anything other than eating brain with his weird cheek tentacles.
Yeah.
That's not a way to go. It's pretty graphic. I'll give Paul Kemp some credit for this book doesn't sort of sugarcoat it. It's like, it tells us straight up what's happening to people.
I mean, it's a loving description of little feety tentacles slithering up somebody's nostril and snot and blood pouring out and then vomit. There's always vomit.
And the blood and snot and basically sentience, because I couldn't think of Kel as anything but an extra gross version of China Mieville's Slake Moths. He calls it soup.
Yeah, and that's an Anzadi thing. They all have slightly different words for what they refer to it as. So soup, they're sometimes in the Star Wars Legends universe referred to as snot vampires.
Yes, I encountered that when I was looking them up in Wikipedia because I couldn't believe that this was not something that just Paul Kemp made up on his own. But no, he just
they appear elsewhere.
Took the grossest elements he could find and. If you're going to read this book, maybe do it on an empty stomach.
Yeah, it's a little gross. The other thing I did want to mention, because in Alex, your summary was like, oh, like Jaden Carr is like, he's going through some stuff and he has doubts about some whatevers. It's probably worth noting what his doubts are actually about. So Jaden Carr is a character that I believe his first appearance is actually a video game, which is Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy. He is the main character. He is one of Kyle Katarn's, this is mentioned in the book.
I also don't know who Kyle Katarn is.
Kyle Katarn is from the Jedi Outcast games, and those are, for the most part, really, really exceptional video games, and they are worth a play. But Kyle Katarn basically becomes one of Luke Skywalker's kind of like big members of the new, what they call the Jedi Praxium, which is just the, I guess, Luke Skywalker's fancy-ass name for his new Jedi thing. But Jaden is involved in something called the Centerpoint Station Battle, and he does mention some of what he has to do here, but that battle really does sort of challenge his perception. He's basically fighting Corellian rebels, and it really sort of shakes his faith in what the Jedi are doing, because effectively Luke makes a lot of the same mistakes that you get in sort of the prequel era, when Jedi are sort of like inserting themselves into other people's business and thinking that they can somehow like have some sort of say in what all of that is, not realizing that they're actually kind of fucking everything up in the process. And Luke sort of makes some of those same mistakes, and Centerpoint Station is one of those mistakes. And this effectively really just messes with Jaden's head, which is, you see a lot in this, he's constantly doubting, etc. Kyle Katarn doing his like Jedi thing tries to like teach him the lesson to help him sort of realize that the doubt is actually part of who he should be. And we get some of that in this story, but that gives you some background on why he sort of feels very shaken when we first are introduced to him in the story, why he doesn't seem to really believe in the Jedi cause anymore, and why he also appears to have abilities and access to the Sith, or at least to dark side powers, not necessarily to the Sith, which he initially worries, and the book kind of suggests it's going to turn out that he's one of the clones or some shit. And it actually turns out something slightly different. It's just part of, maybe he is leading towards a more middle path, which also the Legends universe gives us plenty of examples of, which is sometimes referred to as the Gray Jedi, but other people also follow the middle path. And it's certainly the case that Kyle Katarn also follows the middle path, although he mostly moves towards like the nice, like I'm going to follow like Jedi Luke Skywalker thing, but whatever. Anyway, so there's like some history there that we don't really get in this book. And I don't think you necessarily need it for this book, but it is nice info.
I am an outlier in Star Wars fandom in that I really think the Jedi and the Sith are the more tiresome part of the universe. And I'm almost always more interested in the non-Force using characters anyway. But so I really, really, really hated Rilin. I mean, even before he started, you know, Anakin-ing out.
I was going to say, you mean Mr. Self-Pity?
Yes. I mean, okay. And also, he was Mr. Self-Pity and yet never even went into shock from losing his arm? Okay. I guess that's Force. But anyway, he was really obnoxious and I got a little tired of all the soul-searching with Jaden, although I really liked Kedron and Mar a whole lot. I would read standalone books about those two. Mar more than Kedron. I mean, Kedron, you could kind of call him, you know, a low-rent Han Solo knockoff. But Mar, he's Force-sensitive, we learn. But he basically only channels the Force when he's doing high-level mathematics, which I really thought was cool. And he's just a generally pretty upstanding and great guy. And I loved those two to pieces. Oh, I do have to pick a nit here. One thing from what Alex said. There are some women in the novel, okay? There's a dancing girl.
No.
And a waitress.
There's dancing girls.
And there's two dead ladies that get named.
And there's two dead ladies that do get named, although they never get to talk to each other, let alone about anything other than a man. So this book didn't so much fail the Bechdel test as much as sleep through it and not even bother to take it. Oh, and also Mara Jade in a sort of disembodied way. She's part of Jaden's Force vision, at least as a voice. And it's implied, but not made explicit that she or some twisted ass half version of her might be one of the clones.
Yeah.
And that is one of the questions that I would be most interested in seeing answered whenever we get around to Riptide, because that could get interesting, especially if Luke winds up meeting her at some point or something.
Yeah, I think the female character that got to talk the most was Dr. Black or Dr.
Yeah.
Gray, I believe. Yeah. Gray was a woman. Yeah, or they assumed
Dr. Gray was at least sort of presenting as a woman. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, of course, the sequence when they're trying to dig through what remains of the data that is in the facility, this crazy, specifically described as Thrawn-era research facility, where Thrawn, we learn, was attempting to create Force users of some variety based on DNA he's collected from others.
That I was just sitting there going, why would Thrawn do that? Because he didn't have a whole lot of luck with Force users any other time. I mean,
yeah, of all the people that I would think to just be like, oh God, Force users are assholes, maybe we should just kill them all. It would be Thrawn.
Yeah, I was rather mystified.
But it is Thrawn era, not Thrawn himself, right?
No, they basically said it was Thrawn's. Like, it was his little baby.
It's Thrawn's facility. Yeah, so he has ordered it. They actually refer to the Grand Admiral in some of the data sections where they're talking. I think the reason this book doesn't make it clear what exactly, like, why the facility, like, nobody came back to it. To sort of be like, oh, like, if it was Thrawn's big deal, did he die before he could send someone out to be like, well, what the hell happened? Or did it get abandoned? Or whatever exactly happened? We're not exactly told. For Thrawn, I think that it's more a recognition that if you can create Force users who can be to some degree controlled, or at least are not batshit crazy, which seems to be the thing he learns about clones, like when you get to Jarus, with the two U's. I think that for him, it's a matter of it is an amount of power that no other non-force sensitive person can access. And if you can harness that power, it makes his claim to be able to put together the Empire again and rebuild things from the Ashens even stronger. Because what we learn, if we recall, when we go back to the Thrawn trilogy, right? We're told almost explicitly that Sheev Palpatine, fucking Sheev, what a dumbass name. It's basically the Steve of space. but Sheev Palpatine has such extraordinary power that he was basically making the Empire more efficient by sort of, I don't know, like force suggesting thousands and thousands of people all at once. And that's part of why the Empire was so effective at what it could do, even though it was eventually destroyed. And I think for Thrawn, it's a matter of, well, that is a power that if it can be harnessed, that makes my system, which is better, even more effective. Now, it's also, like, it does seem kind of dumb. Like, the last Jedi clone you met was, he was hanging out in a temple too long, and that just gave him, like, he basically just went, like, Wilson on everybody. Like, he was talking to a volleyball. Like, it was just, like, crazy. So you would think that he would learn, like, the only Jedi that aren't kind of, like, cuckoo banana pants are, like, Luke Skywalker is pretty much the only one.
Well, and I also felt like when Thrawn kind of had that discussion, he was like, okay, we're going to try to, like, use this trick just because, in this particular sense, we need the edge. But he also seemed to be cognizant of the fact that it was a bad thing to have to lean on because that was why the Empire basically shit itself after Palpatine got killed.
Right.
I don't know. I just thought that it was kind of silly.
No, you're right. You're totally right. I think he's using it less as this is like an absolute. We have to have this to replace Sheev Palpatine. and more as a, if we can make it work, it becomes like an extra, it becomes an extra punch that we can use. But it does seem like in the Thrawn, it's weird that we're talking about the Thrawn trilogy. It's just so fucking good. There's all those moments, and we talked about it as I recall, right? These moments in that when you see him, like, changing the way that we think of how the Empire deals with failure. Like, there's a one guy who, like, misses shooting the ship or whatever. And instead of just, like, beheading that guy and throwing his body out the airlock, he's like, oh, you figured out what you did wrong. let's stick that guy over here because he has the mental fortitude to learn from mistakes. And that's how we fix things. Whereas the old Empire was just like Darth Vader would run around like strangling people who like basically made his tea too hot. So,
I mean, you're not wrong.
It's 109 degrees. Too warm.
Vader's got like some bad memories when it comes to things being too hot. Oh. It burnt his mouth.
And I read this kind of with the idea that maybe Thrawn knew about this, and maybe it was someone trying to curry favor with him, trying to surprise him with a biddable Palpatine that has, I mean, I always read that as kind of a really advanced form of battle meditation, what Palpatine could do in the Empire. And that, yeah. So I kind of was thinking that this was clandestine, and Thrawn might have only partially known about it. And if everybody who knew about it died, of course, it would wind up being abandoned, and might have stayed abandoned if Relin and Saez hadn't chased each other across 5,000 years of hyperspace boo-boos.
So I think we'll come back to the hyperspace thing in a minute, because I'm curious what you all think. But maybe my thoughts are a little different, but I got the impression that he knew exactly what was being done, and that the last message we got from the doctors was basically like, oh, we done fucked up. Like, they've gone and started murdering people, and they're not happy, because apparently if you keep them all in here and you lock them up in an underground facility, Force users eventually like go, oh, fuck that noise, that's not fun. And then decide to start killing people. And so they're like, let's gas them all, which I don't think happened at this point. I think that's fairly clear. But then again, I mean, there may be some wiggle room there. I will just say that the ending sequences of them going into the seemingly abandoned facility were, I thought, some of the best written sequences.
Yeah, I mean, it was creepy.
Really creepy.
Super creepy.
It was like, it felt like a horror novel.
Oh, yeah.
I was reading like, I was getting antsy, like waiting for the moment when something would just pop out and go boogie boogie boogie, which of course turns out to be Kel, who's also going booga booga because he's got.
I mean, there was like the clone dude first. I mean, for me, like when he goes into the base, like the best kind of moment in that is when Jaden kind of does the thing where he can like look down into the rooms and he sees that someone has written on the ceiling of the room, stop watching us or stop looking at us. Because I mean, I think right there that just tells so well why these people maybe kind of lost it, because they're these force sensitives who are being treated like bugs in a jar.
Well, I mean, even ordinary people would react that
way.
Oh
yeah,
I've worked in prisons before,
and
you speak to even just the most ordinary inmate who's only there for 6 months or something. They feel that way. It's 24/7 surveillance. It's total control over everything in your life. So I imagine the more powerful you are, the more it might rankle. But that's just a total ordinary human thing. And so Dr. Black and Dr. Gray and Mr. Pink and whatever, they should have known better.
Yeah, well, because you took ordinary people who aren't going to like being watched all the time, and then you basically give them the power to like shoot lightning out of their asses, like... Nothing is going to go well.
The situation is, you've been force lightninged in the belly.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. Well, it does seem to lend some more power to what is Jaden's initial response, which Kedron is like saying, no, let's GTFO, like real hard. We got to get out of here. And Jaden is saying, no, I need to go down there because there are people down there, like they've been stuck there, right? They might still be alive. And so there is a sort of, maybe that adds to this idea that he really feels like these people have been abused, and if I can somehow help them, obviously you can't because they have been tainted by time. The story also tries to suggest that maybe some of that tainting is the crossing of the what they refer to as the Sith, which isn't the actual Sith, because there is an actual Sith race, but yeah. So
I had some real problems with that. I mean, I already, I love the whole thing with the Grey Jedi and all that, but it really kind of grossed me out a bit when basically it sounds like he's making a deterministic argument for, part of your DNA comes from Palpatine, so you're going to be fucking batshit evil.
Yeah, it doesn't make it's a weird thing, though, that, like, keeps happening in the Star Wars universe. Like, anytime you you try to manipulate the Force in any kind of way outside of like your direct individual connection to it, it all just goes bad. Like all of the original Jedi clones, like Jorus, and even like the Luke, sorry, that part is like the worst part. Anyway, yeah.
Oh no, it's the dumbest.
But like all of them
are,
they're like evil, but they're even evil for evil people. Like Jorus is literally right, because Thrawn realizes at this moment he's like, oh my god, like this guy is actually kind of like, we need to like, can we lock him in here? Like, what can we do? Like, I'm gonna wear my weird tree sloth and hope to god he doesn't cut me in two. Because it doesn't seem
like,
to matter.
Oh, I made a
Any
mistake.
Screwing with that just turns it bad. And that happens in this story, too. Because, and it's obviously some of it, there is some weirdness there in terms of, like, nature versus nurture, which is, you know, some of that is probably enhanced by the fact that they are basically treated like lab rats. But they also, all of them are, like, dark. I mean, messed up dark. Like, they literally find a moment, there's a moment when he just, like, finds a bunch of heads.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it's like that's not how you normally react. Like you keep a shrine of heads, right? That suggests a deeper pathology, I guess. So it seems to suggest that when you experiment with the Force outside of your personal individual relationship to it, it corrupts it in a way that is almost irreversible.
Yeah, and it also just it makes it seem like it's just so easy for everyone to be evil, and it's super super hard for anyone to be good.
Yeah,
and I don't know, that always kind of bugged me a little too.
Well, I mean that kind of seems to be one of the ongoing philosophical threads in Star Wars, is that it's so much harder to be good. It is in real life harder to be good and ethical and careful and correct in your impact. It's easy not to care, or to not clean after yourself, or to not realize that those cute shoes that are only $3 in the dollar store were probably made by a 3-year-old child who's already gone blind, you know? And that's one of the things I've appreciated about it, because it not only reminds you that it's hard to be good, but it does a pretty good job of showing you why it's important to be good. No?
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't know, because I think there's a conflation there of being evil versus being ignorant.
Oh.
Hmm. Okay. I see it.
Because, and I mean, you know, that could get us down like a philosophical rabbit hole, but like, you know, especially when we're talking Star Wars style, like to be evil, like you can do bad things by accident. You can do bad things out of ignorance. You can do bad things because it was a mistake or because you didn't know. And there's that, but there's a difference between that and being willfully evil.
Yeah, and we see that explicitly here, right? So Jaden is the first variety, right? He does something because he's given an order, but later he recognizes that it's wrong. And then Sace does the latter when he just decimates a planet at the start of the story.
And he's like, oh, I love listening to the little primate heads screaming as they die. And I was just like, ugh.
I mean, there's definitely a point, like, in the book where, like, we want Sace to not make it. Because he does things that are just monstrous.
But, you know, kind of, like, taking a slight diversion, some, you know, with, like, the you know, causing evil through ignorance or laziness or whatever versus actively being evil, that's actually a discussion that The Good Place is having.
That is so true.
Yeah.
That's, okay, so that's definitely a conversation that we
save for
have.
When we do A Good Place.
Yeah, no, we can't because spoilers and all that, yeah. But everyone should watch
yeah,
The Good Place.
Yeah, and Jen
anyway.
Will literally kill us when this podcast turns out to be 9.5 hours long because we got into a philosophical conversation about 9 different shows we're all watching. So,
but we can interrelate them because, I don't know.
So I want to pull us in a different direction because we've definitely been talking a lot about the end of the book because there's just a lot of meaty stuff in there that's really interesting. And I think we all were in agreement that it's just super creepy and it's very well written. And I enjoyed it quite a lot. But I was very curious about how you guys felt about or you folks felt about the like this time travel narrative that's here, because Sace inadvertently, right, when Relan damages the hyperdrive, it leads them to basically go to relativistic speeds, essentially, but not because they're still going faster than light. And they jump ahead 5,000 years, And while that doesn't amount to much outside of this story, it is, like, it's a thing that, like, Star Trek does with time travel and other narratives, but it's not one that you expect of Star Wars. So I'm curious what you two thought of that element.
Well, I love a time travel story, but I love a good time travel story.
Yeah.
Where the time travel has a point and has something at stake and has something interesting going on. This, they might as well have just come from another place. There were little differences. You know, I thought it was kind of interesting that Rilin's lightsaber needed a power pack. And, you know, there's been some advance in technology, but not 5,000 years worth. And I found it hard to swallow that so much of the galaxy was pretty much the same, even though it's supposed to be 5,000 years different. So it was pointless to me, the time travel element.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole, you know, technology hasn't changed that much and all that stuff, that honestly didn't bother me that much, because Star Wars, with its, like, massive timeline, has always been a bit fridgy in that sense. What mostly just bothered me is, so we have these guys come from the past, and there's, like, you know, maybe a chapter of everyone being like, oh shit, 5,000 years have passed. Oh shit, you're from the past. Oh shit. And then Relan's like, well, off to murder my old Padawan. Do 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 do. Darsan, take me. And, like, so at the end, it's like they might as well have not been there, because it very neatly just sort of destroys everything that came from the past, all of the people that came from the past, all of the ideas that could have come from the past, all that really got communicated, you know, that could affect any of the characters, was Relan's kind of parting message to Jaden that got transmitted by Mir. And that could have honestly, there was absolutely no reason that had to come from, like, a dude from the past.
Exactly.
Yeah, this seems to be a problem that Star Wars has, where people want to, they want people to tell really interesting original stories, but they also don't want to F with the continuity in any way. And this would be an example of something, because this is a character who comes from a period of time when, for the most part, the folks of the present, which is 41 years after the Battle of Yavin, they basically have no real substantial knowledge. They have some information because they've collected some holograms in the other stories, but for the most part, right, they, like, the Jedi knowledge is almost all gone. And so to have an example of a character who could actually tell us some stuff, and then just have him disappear, it's really like, it's like Paul Kemp was, like, sitting around going, like, I really want to have this really cool, like, time travel narrative. And Disney went, yeah, but make sure you wrap it up all in a nice little tidy bow.
Well, not Disney, but Lucasfilm, right?
Yes. Lucasfilm, yeah. Sorry. Also, Disney was reaching through time, because it's a time travel narrative, so that's whatever. True.
Disney is the universe.
That kind of thing that we see in a lot of big properties like this, where they're afraid to really commit to anything that's going to cause a substantive change. And that really kind of hampers the stories that they can tell. But, I mean, on the other hand, I also felt like at the time that this novel came out, since it was before, like, the acquisition and all the shit, like, there is so much nutty stuff that happens in the expanded universe because, for the most part, they were kind of like, okay, we're not going to give, like, Bob and his uncle access to being able to write a tie-in novel, but go forth. Come up with the most, you know, like, the weirdest, most out there stuff you can, and if we like it, then we'll take it and use it in something else. And if not, we're just going to kind of pretend it didn't happen, like the courtship of Princess Leia.
Yeah, it's a bit frustrating because, you know, I kind of am in agreement with Kate that I didn't really appreciate this time travel narrative. Like, it was fine, it was, like, whatever, but it never felt very good, and I think partly because the characters that I most connected to were not Relan and Sace in any real substantial way.
Nah.
Like, I kind of like Drev. Drev was kind of cool, but he dies, so we don't get more. That's the Padawan who drives the ship
into
the cabin.
Yeah, I really like Drev, and if so, he fucking drives his little fighter into the ship so that Relan can have man feelings about it.
Right? And I was so ready for a joyful Jedi.
Yeah!
And it's an interesting thing, but it just sort of just gets drop because Relan goes into his like, ah, woe is me, I'm going to become emo Jedi and like, I'm going to start a punk band. I just feel like that element, like we could have not had it and we could have had those characters just be contemporary characters and left it as contemporary characters that all kind of intersect. And then we get their stories, we get more of their stories, because otherwise it's like we're jumping around all of these different heads at different points in time up until when they show up all in the present.
Yeah.
And some of the characters we really connect with, like Kedrin and Mar, I think we all agree were fantastic characters and we kind of want more of their story. Some of us are less enthused about Jaden, but those are the characters we're more connected
with. I mean,
with.
Kedrin didn't do a lot for me because he really was low-rent Han Solo.
Yeah, we just want more. But what I loved about him is he's a suckier Solo. Because the only way he wins that Sabacc game that they play, like, he's trying to pull off, like, a whole Solo deal. And what ends up happening is, like, he basically loses all the time. He never wins. Ever. Except when he has a Jedi to help him out. Which is of questionable moral quality, but so be it, Jade.
I mean, I felt like it was fair because, as Jaden pointed out, the other guy was actually cheating the whole time.
That is true. Yeah, you're right.
But Han would have noticed and shoot and probably shot first.
I don't know. I don't feel like Han's that competent because Han is like just an actual human disaster.
Chewie would have noticed and shot.
I think in this universe, Han probably is a little bit more competent than we give him credit for. I think in the new expanded universe, they've tempered that considerably.
I mean, I feel like in the new universe, they just made him as much of a loser as he was in the original trilogy, which I appreciated because I feel like he's my role model because, you know what? He's like a guy with graying hair who doesn't have his shit together, so I don't have to feel as bad about not having my shit together and I'm almost 40.
Yeah, because, yeah, it's true. Well, anyway, okay, so, all right, but we could get into a whole other conversation on that.
I have a question for you guys that's just sitting here in my head now. Okay, so, we all like Drev. How much more would we have loved this book if he was the one that came forward? And we don't have to necessarily go with Relan gets killed and so his Padawan is angry or needs to avenge him or finish the job or whatever, just something happened, so Relan didn't come, but Drevi did. I think it would have been a much niftier story. Again, the joyful Jedi, and maybe he survives the story and goes on to cheer up the Order.
Well, I mean, I feel like he would have had some really useful things to kind of communicate to Jaden.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you get the impression that Relan just doesn't understand how to deal with Drev, but like, for example, if it had been Drev that had come up, I could see him potentially, you know, him being willing to sacrifice himself to blow up the dreadnought if it needed to, but I could not see him at all being like, and now I'm just gonna eat all the Sith mineral and be like, blah, fine, I'm giving into my hate so that I can murder everyone.
Not at all.
No. That would have been cool.
Yeah, I think the story I think would definitely be stronger because I think part of the problem that from a narrative perspective is that Relan is super in his head and is kind of a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
But Jaden also is a little bit of that. He's not in the darkness to the same degree by any stretch because Relan is just like straight up emo punk band at this point. Like he wants to wear eyeliner and like just sing about like writing in his composition books and terrible poetry about how the girls don't like him. But the problem with that is that you get these two Jedi who are both kind of like forlorn, and while one of them comes out of it less forlorn, it does feel like a little bit like overkill. Whereas if you put Drev in there, that really like upsets that balance because you have super like this super happy guy who like giggles and laughs even in the face of darkness, and then this other guy who's like, I have all these doubts and I'm sad and I might start an emo punk band. Against each other, I think, is great. Mm-hmm. It would be a wonderful mixture. But we get Relan instead. And I think the problem is that...
I mean, it's like Relan and Jaden just have a mope off. Like...
Yeah.
Well, Relan's kind of a one-armed cautionary tale for Jaden.
But it doesn't feel that way.
I think that was maybe how he was supposed to function, and hence his last bit of wisdom at the end.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Don't be like me, kind of.
Yeah.
But now all I can think of is Jaden and Relan forming the Smiths, while Jaden and Drev would have formed the first Jedi ska band.
I would watch.
And now I'm just picturing them skanking across the universe. I always listen to ska music in the spring. I don't know why, but
it sounds like our conclusion is we kind of wish that he'd written a slightly different book.
In some ways, yeah.
Which is odd because have either of you read any of Paul Kemp's other stuff?
Mm-mm. I have. I've read some of his fantasy. It was pretty fun. He's a good writer.
Yeah. I don't remember much about them except that I like them, but I read the two Ale and Nyx books. I remember having found them pretty delightful.
Yeah, the Nyx books, yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
It's clear to me why they picked Kemp, because
yeah,
when this book is really working, it works extraordinarily well. And I think mostly it feels like where the story doesn't work as well, it doesn't feel like it's Kemp so much as like being hampered by... I mean, by the time this book comes out, like we've got like 937,000 Star Wars books come out. So the continuity is so complicated, and there's just trying like to make new stories that are interesting but feel grand, but it creates this wall that is really hard, like a shield. It creates a deflector shield from which you need a power crystal to get through.
The weight of all the prior books served for Kemp the way the mouse did for Claudia Gray on our last show.
Yeah. Huh?
Just hampered him from being him just a little too much. And maybe that's why the time travel angle wasn't allowed to go anywhere. Just like one of Claudia Gray's coolest characters didn't get to survive his book.
Okay, so I do have one question for you before, I mean, we're getting to the point where you probably want to wrap up, but I'm just curious as a little detail. So in the 5,000 years ago point, right, there are these two ships, was it the Heritage
Harbinger
and Omen?
And the
Harbinger,
Omen.
Harbinger and Omen, excuse me. Thank you, Kate.
Which, hello.
Yeah, very on the nose. Woo-hoo. Yeah. So they both are getting, they're both like, we're like collecting all this like Lognan stuff that's like super Sith, like basically cocaine. When the ship, so something happens to the Omen because the Harbinger goes to the future, but there is Farpoint, which is built on a ship that crash landed that nobody knows where it came from. And they just like built a city inside of it, which is cool. It's a cool detail. But I got the impression that the ship that's in it is the Omen, that it crash landed.
I didn't even think of that.
But I don't know if that is. It was never explicitly said because the story, like none of the characters that are from the Harbinger survive, right? They all just die. So we have no, so it's just never told. But did anyone else get that impression, or was I the only one going, this is the Harbinger, this is the Omen?
Oh, that is totally my headcanon now.
I didn't actually think of that, so.
Ooh. Right? I guess that's why he's the PhD.
Okay. I'm not that smart.
Dr. Duke figures it out.
I didn't even do math that would have impressed Mar. Well, okay. Then I guess that's a fun observation then, that maybe that is.
Yeah. So I like that, though.
And Farpoint's cool. I do like Farpoint quite a lot in this.
Oh, man. That's another thing. I would read books and books set on that, because I love... Alistair Reynolds did a really cool thing with that in the third Revelation space novel, Redemption Arc, where the giant light hugger spaceship Nostalgia for Infinity has landed on a planet and has basically been turned into like a giant municipal cathedral building thing. And it's really cool. I love that. I love repurposing.
So anyway, okay. So it seems like we're in a consensus that we enjoyed quite a bit certain aspects of the book, and it seems like we all kind of are in agreement that like the best parts of the book are really when it gets into like its horror element.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
those are the most fun, and we did enjoy for the most part Kedron, more so Mar, because we want more of Mar. We were not as enthused about the time travel narrative. It's fine, but it's just sort of like whatever, because it doesn't amount to much past this. So it seems like for the most part we kind of enjoyed the book. We just like we wanted it to be better. And so I'm going to jump to Alex. If you'd like to say a quick thing and then grade it, go for it. What's your grade?
Well, I mean, I'd give it like B- C+, because there was some stuff I like. except there were literally no living female characters who had names who got to speak. In the year 2010, this was still a thing.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately for that, I'm going to deduct an entire letter grade, because I'm pretty mad about it. So, I'm going to give it a D.
Damn, that's harsh. All right.
D for damn. You know
what, if you don't want a D, put less D in your book.
Okay, that joke gets an A.
Oh, yes, please.
All right, Kate, final thought and grade. Go for it.
I was in the realm of a C+, until we got to the ending bit. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was playing new content for KOTOR.
Mm.
Which I really loved those games, both of them, a whole lot. And then thinking back, I was like, oh, the lignin is maybe crystals for lightsabers, and maybe it makes lightsabers red or yellow or whatever, because you know all the crafting when you're building a lightsaber and stuff in KOTOR. And so anything that makes me think of KOTOR and makes me feel like I'm playing a new level of that, I have to bump up a little. So I'm going to say a B-. Maybe a B, because I really like Marl a lot.
You got to come to some sort of decision. You can't just like name every grade B-. In the alphabet.
B-. B-, because my gender is not there.
Fair enough. That's fair.
You mean just couldn't identify with the waitress who screamed a lot?
Or the hologram dead doctor.
Oh my god.
Or the disembodied voice of Mara Jade. Or possibly Mara Jade.
Like, this would have been so easy, just one of the characters is a woman. Like, Mar could have been a woman.
I mean, make Relan a woman.
And you could have just had, like, a platonic smuggler duo. It's just, like, I don't know, it's just so strange. Okay, so my final thoughts and grade. I found the beginning a little meh, because it was just very heavily embedded in all of this time travel stuff, which, in the end, just kind of amounts to nothing. But I really loved the horror element, like that. I just was like pouring through the pages when I got to that. I really liked that. And that's kind of what I wish this story had been. It's been much more like, let's really dive into this element of it and not focus so much on the mythology of like Jedi stuff and just focus on that, because that's a cool story. I agree with Alex. The absence of women who are on the page and are present in the same moment as our other characters, who also are alive, is not good. Because they're just not there, and it's really. I know it's 2010, and people would be like, "Oh, it's so long ago," but it's really not. We were talking about this problem. Well, we've been talking about it for decades, but it was very clearly part of the online conversation by 2010, because I fucking remember
Robert Silverberg.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So,
Dr. Duke. I have one more question.
Jesus. Okay.
And it's for our resident asshole geographer.
Oh dear.
Oh no.
So, you know, in the very beginning, when Sice is basically strip mining the moon for the lignin, How plausible and well depicted and realistic, and what grade would you give that aspect of this book?
I mean, it was bullshit space mining. Like, I mean, sure, I don't
yes,
understand.
Yes, Alex, tell us how you strip mine an entire planet.
Yeah, that's...
Because that's what your degree's in.
I mean, I thought it was a little odd that he was like, okay, we're going to strip mine this entire planet by setting it on fire. Because if you basically turn the entire surface of the planet into glass, that is not probably going to make it easier to mine. But, you know, I just assumed it's because he wanted to kill all the monkeys.
I was asking, was he maybe thinking he could mine and smelt at the same time?
I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming that there were reasons. Maybe the robots like working on a smooth surface better or something. But I'm guessing he just like set the entire planet on fire because it was a great moment for him to be like, hello, I am the villain and I am evil. I'm super evil.
Yeah, it seemed more it was like, oh, I just want to kill some stuff.
Yeah.
And I think this is easier. And like all of the robots are probably telling him off page, like, yeah, dude, this is actually going to make it really hard for us. And he's like, look, R2 or R12, whatever your stupid name is. Just do it. He's doing a Kylo. He's just like, more, more. And then, you know, going back into his room and, like, smashing his fist into things because that's how he gets his jollies off.
Oh, I thought maybe he was just mad because they forgot the Sith marshmallows.
Okay. Well, anyway, so my grade, by the way.
Yes, sir.
I would give this probably a B minus or a C plus. I'll just say C plus because, yeah. Anyway, you got the idea. So we should probably mention we're going to be reading a book in the current expanded universe because this book is from Legends. And we're doing this back and forth thing. And we have all elected by unanimous decision to do Timothy Zahn's Star Wars Thrawn book from the new continuity, which is a bit of just pure joy solely because they brought back Timothy Zahn, who wrote the original Thrawn trilogy, to write a new Thrawn book in this new continuity. And I cannot wait. And Alex will eventually tell us a lot of detail about their Thrawn fanfic that they have written in the next episode. So,
look, I'm just going to say that I feel like Timothy Zahn leveled up as a writer in this book, and it's like 1,000,000% gayer. So
I already like it more.
Oh my goodness. So. I think I need to go lay down for a minute.
Are you having the vapors?
Pass me the smelling salts.
Oh goodness. And it, also this is on audiobook and Mark Thompson does the voice. Although Mark Thompson does a version of the Thrawn from the Rebels. Which is very interesting.
Oh.
So, anyway, random nonsense. So we'll be reading next. So if you want to get that book now so that you can start reading it along with us, please do. We're happy to have people send us Twitter questions and stuff at skiffingfanny.com. Obviously, if you want to support us, patreon.com/skiffingfanny is one way you can do it. You can also send us reviews on iTunes and stuff. Really appreciate any of that. This specific show also has its own iTunes page specific, so you can do that.
Send us your Hugo votes.
Yes, give us all your Hugo votes. All 47 of them. I want all of them. I don't actually know how many people listen to this podcast, so it's probably more than 47.
47 is a Star Trek joke, dude.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Did I make a... I made a funny.
You made a Star Trek funny on a Star Wars show.
Oh, crossing the streams. Crossing the streams.
That's the ballsiest thing I've ever heard.
I learned from Ghostbusters, you never cross the streams. Because it never goes well.
Cross the streams.
Okay.
Cross and the streams, Dr. Duke.
On that note, we gotta stop this nonsense because all of us need to go to our normal lives and I've got Game of Thrones to watch. So, awkward ending and scene. Intro and outro music for this episode comes from Juno by Cronox. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org or by going to skiffingfanty.com and looking at the show notes for this particular episode.